Open signal, are we ready to go? Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Wednesday, May 27th, 2 p.m. meeting of the Portland City Council. Good afternoon, Carla, if you could please call the roll.
Good afternoon, Mayor. Hardesty?
Here.
Udaly?
There she goes. She's muted.
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by phone, and the City has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The public can also provide written testimony to Council by emailing the Council Clerk. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and promote social physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your continued patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through this challenging situation to do the city's business. And now we'll hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good afternoon, Lauren.
Good afternoon. To participate in city council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the City Council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruptions may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded. Thank you.
Thank you. Carla, have any items other than 398 and 399 been pulled off of this morning's consent agenda?
Those are the only two that I have, Mayor.
Very good. Please call the roll on the remainder of the consent agenda.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The consent agenda is adopted, and we'll hear items 398, 399 after our time certain item, and we'll have staff here prepared to discuss those items. That brings us to the regular agenda for this afternoon. Carla, could you please read item 410?
Mm-hmm. Amend planning and zoning code, the comprehensive plan map, and the zoning map to implement the expanding opportunity for affordable housing project.
Colleagues, we continue last Thursday's hearing on a proposal to expand opportunities for affordable housing from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. BPS staff, of course, are here to present the package of amendments we agreed upon last week, including one code amendment and two map amendments. We also instructed the BPS Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff to go back, collect more information, issue proper notices, and return back to council with a series of map amendments that have already been identified. I want to thank the BPS staff for taking on a second, more short-term package for us to consider in a couple of months. Finally, the council signaled support for creating a subsequent broader project focused on considering additional zoning text and map changes, focused on creating community benefits and anti-displacement strategies. Council has signaled a strong commitment to centering equity in the city's long-term strategies in a resilience resolution, which we passed last week. A main pillar of centering equity outlined in the equity toolkit is partnering with communities who've been harmed due to discriminatory practices and policies. I hear a very good intent in starting a bigger, longer-term project at BPS. And I also want to recognize the need for the city to meaningfully engage with community members and organizations on the front lines to make sure that this is also a top priority of theirs. I believe we must listen to community members and organizations who are knowledgeable about legal and effective ways to make sure that race is no longer a proxy or predictor for how well or how long or how you live. We've limited staff capacity and city dollars. I'd rather we listen in order to prioritize staff time and resources with these community members, not for these community members, as many people expressed last week. I believe we're doing that, listening in many ways, including BPS's anti-displacement project that council has invested in. Turning back to the initial package of amendments, I propose we listen to the presentation and then vote on all three amendments as a package. Before I turn this over to Eric Engstrom from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to walk us through this, I want to see if any of my colleagues have any further comments before we begin this afternoon's work. Not seeing any. All right, Eric, take it away.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler. Does everyone hear me all right?
Loud and clear.
Great. For the record, my name is Eric Engstrom. I'm here representing the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. With me is Nan Stark, who was the project manager for this project. For the discussion, we'll be referring to a memo which was distributed dated May 26th, yesterday. The memo includes some attachments with draft code amendments and map amendments. There's also a reference to the additional directives the mayor just mentioned in draft form. So we'll go through those as they're referenced in that memo. The first one was the code amendment around affordability. And as you recall, this amendment request require that projects taking advantage of the conditional use exemption be regulated affordable housing by aligning the language with PHB's SDC waiver program. The draft code language was developed in collaboration with BDS staff and PHB staff, so I want to thank them for their help with that. As I mentioned, this links the conditional use exemption to an existing program which allows BDS and PHB to implement this without creating any new forms or administrative rules. So it allows us to move quickly with this. Are there any questions about this specific language?
Not seeing any error.
Okay. The second set of amendments are in the memo as I believe it's item 3 in the memo, and this was to make the two map amendments that council agreed to. The first of those was at the St. Andrews site. This implements a compromise that was worked out with neighbors at that property. The initial recommendation was to place multi-dwelling zoning on the site, but the institution believes that R5 would be sufficient for their needs. Staff supports this change. And Nan is here to describe in a little more detail what we're actually doing on this amendment. Nan, so you want to do that?
Sure. Thank you, Eric. Nan Stark, for the record, with Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. So St. Andrew, a representative from St. Andrew Church, proposed a zone change at the Planning and Sustainability Commission hearing. From their current R10 zoning to RM1. Then during the testimony period, we sent out a postcard notice to the neighbors. That's how they found out about the proposal to R1. A few of the neighbors contacted me and wanted clarification about that. And they were not happy with the RM1. Saying that it didn't really fit in with the context of the neighborhood. So I encouraged them to be in touch with the representative from the church, which they did. They all came up with the alternative proposal for R5, which will fulfill the church's desire to work with Habitat for Humanity or another nonprofit to develop a few townhouses in the future. So the R5 zoning will still work with what their needs are.
Thank you, Nan. I also just want to briefly mention that there's a technical correction with this, that the change to R5 would have left a very strange sliver of, I believe, R10 on an adjacent driveway. And so we're also proposing to clean that up and make that line straight and eliminate that sliver by merging that driveway area with the adjacent, I believe, zoning to the north of that. So are there any questions about that particular change?
Commissioner Hardesty had a question, Eric.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is to Nan. This change that you just spoke of, you said now they will be able to develop a few housing units.
Right.
Say more about that. What does that mean in practice?
The R5 zoning is single dwelling zone. That's the kind of housing that the church envisioned putting in at some point in the future. So RM1, you know, is a multi-dwelling zone, and so it allows, you know, potentially a building with multiple units in it as opposed to what the R5 typical development is. It could be in the form of attached houses, townhouse-like development, or single detached housing.
I'm sorry, Nan, that is different than what I thought we were changing the zoning for. I did not anticipate that we were going to change the zoning so that individual single family homes that won't actually have to abide by RIP, if in fact they happen sooner rather than later. So talk about how that is consistent with our goal of adding to the pool of affordable housing in Portland.
Essentially, it's the same as what's going to result from any of these map changes, which will require affordability now whenever there's development on these faith-owned properties. Is that what you mean, or?
So I guess I'm hearing something different today than I heard before. I thought that the whole reason why we were bringing this whole proposal forward was the desire for some institutions to be able to build affordable housing. So, and that sounds like that's true for everything we're voting on, with the exception of the last one you just mentioned, that they may sometime in the future build some single family homes, possibly later. That's different than the goal that I thought we had here today.
Is there a goal, Commissioner? My understanding on this site is that their intent is to be working with an organization such as Habitat for Humanity to be building affordable single family housing, but it's different than that. If we had zoned it multifamily, there'd be more units potentially, but we're still proposing, and the institution's intent is still affordability.
That was what I wanted to hear, is that the ultimate goal would be that these still would be housing that would be affordable for low-income people to live in.
Yes.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. The other point, Commissioner Hardesty, is that this site is more than half a mile from the nearest transit street. There's one bus, literally one bus per day, not one bus per anything. It's one bus trip per day that goes past this site. So it would be a really inappropriate place to have a lot of multifamily housing or a lot of housing, period. And it's surrounded by R10 and R5. So this, I believe, is by far, it still gets as housing. It just doesn't put a lot of people in a place that they're not going to be able to get anywhere from without driving.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, are we ready to move on to the next one then?
Looks like it. Yeah, thank you, Eric.
Okay, the second map amendment, as you will recall, was to remove the Boundary Street site from the initial package that we're voting on. As you know, we received quite a bit of testimony about that property. It brought up some questions about the site that deserve further investigation, including issues around the condition of the street. The site is also forested, and it's an identified resource within the city's inventory of significant natural resources. This was information that was highlighted in testimony. And so for these reasons, staff supports removing this site from the present initial action and including it in the package B for further consideration without prejudice to the outcome of that consideration. So that you'll see it's listed in the item that is the language about the follow-up directive for that package B. But this initial amendment that we're asking you to consider today is to remove it from the present package. Are there any questions about that?
Not seeing any.
We may yet get to 12 minutes here. This is going fast. So today we're asking council to move the three amendments that we just discussed. Those are the items 1 and 3 in the memo that was conveyed to you. After we do that, then we can talk about next steps.
All right, very good. Thank you, Eric, and thank you, Nan. So colleagues, unless there's any further questions, we'll vote on the package of amendments. First, I'll need a motion and a second.
So moved.
Second.
Commissioner Hardesty moves. Commissioner Udaly seconds. Any further discussion on the package of amendments 1 through 3?
Looks like Commissioner Fritz is trying to get in.
Commissioner Fritz, did you have a question?
No, thank you.
Very good.
If I did, I would have raised my hand.
Very good. Carla, please call the roll.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
I very much appreciate the work that staff has done in a very short time frame to be able to bring us this package, and all the amendments make perfect sense. And I'm going to say thank you every time I can to Nan Stock, because she's had such a great career that this is a very fitting way to cap it all off. So this is the first time I'll thank you, Nan, but it's not the last. Aye.
Wheeler.
Well, first of all, I also really appreciated hearing public testimony from so many community members and neighborhood associations, community institutions, and developers about the amendments. We got a lot of emails as well as people who testified via Zoom. I want to thank Eric and Nan, Shannon Callahan, Matt Schaebold, Dory Van Bockel, Matt Wickstrom, Kimberly Talon, and Lauren King, who all worked very, very hard on this proposal. I am very happy to vote aye. The amendments are adopted. Thank you, colleagues. Eric, next, can you please share information about the next steps in order for the council to bring this proposal across the finish line?
Sure, thank you, Mayor. As we noted in the memo that was conveyed, our plan would be to take this information and prepare revised findings that update the land use findings to comply with the changes you've made. We would need to set a date, which we can talk about in a minute, about when that would happen. We would also update the code commentary in the recommended draft. This is essentially commentary in the draft that reflects the legislative intent of today's amendments. We'd bring that back to you at a future meeting, and we'd provide a substitute to the ordinance to reflect the right documents. My understanding from the last session and the directives you gave us was, as is outlined in items 5 and 6 in the memo, that you would like to direct us to do two things in the future. One is come back in a few months with consideration of the additional map sites that were brought up in testimony. So that's the item 5, or essentially package B, if you will. And then the final thing is item 6 would be a directive for us to scope a longer term project that follows up on this. As the mayor mentioned earlier, aimed at a broader set of stakeholders. Based on the initial discussion we had with all of you, we drafted something. This may or may not be the final language that you wish to adopt, but we would like feedback on that. So we'd come back one more time and accept all those things and then move it to second reading. So I think at this point, the main question is whether council has questions about those additional directives and then setting the date for that return.
Commissioner Udaly has a question.
I'm fine, thank you.
Very good. So Carla, then can we get a confirmation on the date when we would be returning?
I don't believe we've set a time. Eric, how far out do you need?
I would also involve Lauren in this conversation because it involves findings, but at least at the BPS level, we could do this in the next week or two if council has time. At least a week ahead, if not two.
Okay. I have June 17th. Oh, I'm sorry, Lauren, go ahead.
No, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. Eric, the timeline Eric's proposing. Okay.
Would June 17th work, or is that too early?
I think that works for me. Nan or anyone else, I guess I would defer to the attorney if they've got time to work with us on the findings.
Yeah, we can make June 17th work.
Okay.
Thank you.
So is there any reason we were hoping to get in a little bit earlier than that in order to make the effective date sooner?
I think we probably want at least a week to finish up the findings. I don't know what else, if there is any earlier time available.
Carla, would the week before that be possible? June 10th?
How much time are you looking for? It's pretty booked right now, mornings and afternoons.
And the 11th?
Yeah, that's with RIP and another item already.
We probably want to steer clear of the RIP agenda item.
Okay.
Why? Commissioner Fritz had a comment as well.
Yeah, it seems like it's not going to take more than 5 minutes. It's just the vote, right?
Unless,
is that correct?
Unless the council wants to amend the directives, but I didn't hear any specific concern about that today, but that would be the only thing that would hold us up.
Yeah, I share Nan's thought that let's do it as soon as possible. Because it's going, and does it have an emergency on it already?
No. We did not put an emergency on it just in light of everything that's happening, that could be council's prerogative as well.
So whenever you bring it back, we can move to put the emergency on it, right?
Lauren, is that correct?
Yeah, yes. Council could decide to add an emergency clause when they amend the ordinance.
Okay.
Do
you want to do it June 10th then?
Before we finalize the date, I just want to be clear what we're sending you away to do. This is part two, right? So this is the part that you pretty much just have to do public notification and get input. Is that correct?
There's three things that are happening. The first is the package that you just discussed and the amendments and all the other recommendations that came from the Planning and Sustainability Commission. That's what you'd be adopting with this ordinance when you move it. The ordinance would have two directives in it pointing to future work. The first would be the package of specific sites that we didn't get to in that first package that you'd want us to come back in September. And the final item would be a broader, more long-term scoping of a future project. There's not a date attached to that in the directive, and it's intentionally broad because we haven't scoped it with community yet.
Thank you very much, Eric. That's really helpful. I agree with Commissioner Fritz. I mean, it sounds like you're going to come back with what we discussed today, and then you just need a vote from us to keep going and doing the additional work that you need to do. And so I support Commissioner Fritz. I'd rather say sooner rather than later, because I also don't want this caught up in RIP, because RIP will be its own personal thing. So
Ever the optimist, Commissioner.
I try to be. Thank
Commissioner
you.
Udaly.
I was a little confused about the process and timeline today, so I'm going to hold most of my comments for when this comes back. But I just want to really appreciate staff at BPS, BDS, and the Housing Bureau. I know that I made you guys do a bunch more work, and I just want to appreciate, thank you for being so responsive and helping us come up with a solution that's workable for everyone, and I think really great for our city. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Commissioner. All right, so that concludes.
Mayor, we have not confirmed the date and time that this is coming back.
Oh, Carla?
So did you want to do it on the 10th or on the 3rd? Either date I could squeeze you on somewhere.
I think the city attorney's office would ask for the 10th. I mean, we do need some time to look at the findings.
We could do the 11 a.m. on June 10th.
Okay, so June 10th at 11 a.m., time certain to adopt findings, amend the ordinance. The record is closed and will remain closed. Thank you.
All right, very good. Anything else for the good of the order on this item?
Not for me. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Appreciate it. We will now go back to the consent agenda, item number 398. If you could read that, please, Carla. Mm-hmm.
Sorry. 398, a settlement of Ethiopia Amdino bodily injury claim for the sum of $125,000. Involving the Portland Police Bureau.
All right, and we have Randy Stenquist from Risk Management is here to walk us through this particular item, I believe.
Actually, Mayor, this one is mine. I'm Jessica Bird.
Hi, Jessica.
Risk Analyst. Hi.
Okay, good. Thank you. Welcome.
I think Randy is 399.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Sure. Okay, again, my name's Jessica Bird. I'm with Risk Management. Hello, Mayor and Commissioners. And everyone can hear me okay?
Yep, loud and clear.
Great. Okay, this claim involves a collision that occurred on April 19th, 2018 in the eastbound lanes of the Interstate 84 freeway. As Mr. Amdino approached the gateway area heading eastbound on Interstate 84, he was struck head on by Christopher Kennard, who was driving the wrong way on the same stretch of freeway. Shortly prior to the involved collision, Mr. Kennard had been involved in a hit-and-run collision. A Portland Police Bureau officer discovered the vehicle based on its description and within the vicinity of the reported hit-and-run collision. The Portland Police Bureau officer activated their overhead lights and planned to stop the vehicle and investigate. The driver, Mr. Kennard, ignored the lights and drove around the PPB officer and proceeded the wrong way onto Interstate 84. The officer continued to follow, and about 30 seconds later, the collision occurred between Mr. Kennard and Mr. Amdino. Mr. Amdino reported injuries to his head, neck, back, chest, all four extremities, and post-traumatic stress disorder. He treated for approximately 14 months post-accident. He reported missing 6 months of work. His attorney submitted a demand on his behalf for $86,855.41 for his economic damages, including medical expenses and wage loss, and another $175,000 for his non-economic damages. The vehicular pursuit was found to be out of PPB policy. Risk Management engaged in negotiations with Mr. Amdino's attorney and was able to reach an agreement of $125,000 inclusive of medical expenses, wage loss, and non-economic damages.
All right, so those are the basic facts of the case. Why don't we hear public testimony and then you might have further questions to answer. I believe Mr. Handelman pulled this. Am I right, Carla, or am I wrong about that?
That's correct, and he is on the line.
And is he the only person who'd like to testify, or are there others?
He is the only one for this item.
Very good. Mr. Handelman, 3 minutes. Name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and our group has asked numerous times for settlements regarding police misconduct to be placed on the regular agenda rather than the consent agenda to promote transparency and the discussion of underlying policies that may have led to the conduct in the first place. We normally don't pull settlements for traffic collisions, but as you just heard, this was a case that involved a Portland police officer chasing Mr. Amdino the wrong way down a freeway, leading to non-life-threatening injuries, and Mr. Kennard himself losing his life in the crash. Officer Alfonso Valadez was the officer involved in the chase, and normally officers do not get disciplined because of the monetary settlements, but Mr. Valadez was indeed fired from his job over the incident. Not for the death of Mr. Kennard or the injuries to Mr. Amdino, but for violating the vehicle pursuit policy and being untruthful. The settlement is for bodily injuries, and we hope the money helps make Mr. Amdino whole. We continue to urge council to discuss such settlements to talk about broader policy issues. If not now, when? The Police Review Board reports, which reveal the two times Officer Valadez got fired, are never presented for public discussion. Valadez had only been back on the force a few weeks after the Bureau previously tried to fire him from what appears to be an off-duty sexual assault, but an arbitrator overturned that decision. He was suspended without pay for 40 hours instead. It appears the city's proposed state legislation around limiting decisions made in arbitration relates back to this case, but that legislation would not have made a difference. The proposed legislation addresses only cases where the arbitrator tries changing the level of discipline as listed in the discipline matrix. But like the many cases where the arbitrator has overturned a firing and a case where a person dies at the hand of police, Officer Valadez was reinstated because the arbitrator disagreed that the officer violated Bureau policy. There were two charges levied against Valadez, the lesser of which led to a 40-hour suspension, and the more serious one, affirmed only by Chief Marshman, led to termination. Both findings relied on the discipline matrix, and the arbitrator did not propose to change the level of discipline, which is what the bill contemplates. The male arbitrator disagreed with the city that there was clear and convincing evidence Valadez had sex with a woman without her consent. However, he agreed that the married officer showed poor judgment by engaging in sex at a party where alcohol had been consumed, bringing discredit to the Bureau. The arbitrator's decision does not indicate the Bureau claimed this charge involved aggravating circumstances, which would be the only way the discipline guide would have overcome the arbitrator's decision and supported firing Valadez. The arbitration system in this case leaned on a poor set of investigative circumstances, which is typical for survivors of sexual assault. That same system too often finds reasons to absolve officers of any wrongdoing in deadly force incidents. It's that overall system that needs to be fixed, not the narrow question of whether arbitrators can change the level of discipline. Regardless, Officer Valadez is now off the force, Mr. Kennard's family has lost a loved one, and Mr. Amdino is lucky to have survived. This case will at minimum cost the city $125,000, and it should prompt a discussion about officer training when they return to duty and a reconsideration of the legislation the mayor recently referred to as a, quote, police accountability bill. We hope the city can open up a space for dialogue about these issues, since there does not seem to be any appetite to discuss them at council hearings where lawsuits are settled. Thank you.
Thank you. And there's no further public testimony on this item?
Correct.
Okay, any further discussion on this item? Carla, please call the roll.
Hardesty?
First, I want to appreciate Dan Handelman for coming today and providing testimony. I, as a city commissioner, learned much more about this case just based on hearing Dan Handelman tell me the extenuating circumstances. And I think Dan raises a very good point. Traditionally, large settlements, I pull off consent because I agree with him that there should be a public conversation about what changes and policy have been made based on these settlements that we continue to pay. Had I known a bit more about this particular settlement, to me, it was just an auto accident, somebody going the wrong way. I think what the lesson I'm taking away from this is that I will need to have deeper debriefings on these kind of settlements because I trust the information that I get. And when the information is incomplete, it will lead me to make incomplete decisions. And so I vote aye. And thank you, Dan Handel.
You Daly.
Thank you, Dan. I vote aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. The next item is 399.
pay settlement of Mark Mayberry personal injury lawsuit in the sum of $50,000 involving Portland Parks and Recreation.
And Randy, you're here for this one, correct?
I am indeed, sir.
Very good.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
All right, good. So between 2003 and 2007, the United States District Court of Oregon and the Ninth Circuit, among other things, put an injunction in place prohibiting the city and its employees, including police and park rangers, from removing or denying entry to evangelical Christian street preachers from areas within, inside or outside the boundaries of permanent events that are open to the public unless there is probable cause to arrest for violation of a statute or ordinance. This prohibition extends to fenced or gated areas, events that are open to the public. The litigation in Gathright specifically involved Waterfront Park and Pioneer Courthouse Square. On June 1st of 2019, a city park ranger erred in issuing an exclusion to Mr. Mayberry, an evangelical Christian activist at Waterfront Park. The park ranger obtained assistance from Portland Police Bureau when Mr. Mayberry objected in light of the 2003-7 injunction. Mr. Mayberry appealed the exclusion. The situation was compounded by Parks failing to appear at the exclusion hearing, which resulted in the hearings officer dismissing the exclusion and finding that Mr. Mayberry was engaged in free speech at the time the exclusion was issued. Through his attorney, Mr. Mayberry filed a federal lawsuit against the city of Portland and the park ranger in October of 2019. The city admits that Mr. Mayberry's First Amendment rights were violated as dictated by the 2003 Gathright litigation. And among other things, this injunction allows the evangelical Christian preachers and others similarly situated to espouse their views at Waterfront Park, including at all permitted activities that are open to the general public. Risk management and the city attorney's office successfully negotiated a compromise settlement in the amount of $50,000 with Mr. Mayberry and his attorney in exchange for the dismissal of this lawsuit. The settlement is inclusive of all economic and non-economic damages and attorney fees and is contingent on the approval of the city council. In light of this incident in June of 2019, the city has made changes in processes and training with the Parks Bureau, park rangers, and with the police bureau. Park ranger training that is already in place regarding Gathright will be more prominently emphasized for new hires during the annual refresher training for park rangers. That was just completed at the beginning of March of this year. Park rangers have also developed additional processes for revoking a park exclusion issued in error, which should prevent the same situation from occurring in the future. In addition, Portland Police Bureau has training in place regarding the Gathright injunction, and that training will again be presented at annual in-services and now include knowledge testing. We also have Scott Modi from the City Attorney's Office here if any of you have questions about some of the more legal aspects of our settlement.
Colleagues, any questions prior to testimony? I don't see any. Carla, you said some people had signed up.
Yes, we have two people signed up.
Very good. 3 minutes each. Name for the record, please.
The first person is Ray Hack.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler. I wanted to say, first of all, I wanted to quote a Bible verse. This would be Psalm 51:17. It says, "A broken and contrite heart, these, O God, you will not despise." The city of Portland, unfortunately, has a well-deserved reputation for hostility towards straight preachers. Based on my dealings with Mr. Modi, the city wants to change that. The city wants to change its image, and it wants to be a truly tolerant city. And I think and I just wanted to say that approving this settlement would go a long way towards showing that the city is indeed contrite and willing to make changes as far as how it treats street preachers who are civilly and peacefully exercising their free speech rights.
Thank you, Ray. Appreciate your testimony.
And the next person is Mark Mayberry.
Good afternoon, Mark. Mark, are you unmuted?
He was having some difficulties earlier. Maybe he's...
Is he on the phone, Carla, or is he on Zoom?
Keelan, do we know if he's available?
It looks like he is connecting by his computer. I don't know, maybe Mark, if you're able to try to call in. It does look like he's unmuted.
He is unmuted?
Hmm. Yes.
Mark, can you try one more time? And does he have the call-in number?
Yes, there's a call-in number available in the invitation he received.
Mark, do you want to try calling in?
It looks like he's been sent the call-in number, so.
Okay, let's just wait. Let's wait 1 minute, see if we can get him. We're all trying to make these technologies work for us. They don't always work perfectly. Mark, you there now?
He's muted now.
I don't even see him on the list. Oh, there, okay. Yeah, you're right.
Just do a star six on his phone.
Yeah, if you're on your phone, Mark, try star six to unmute. On the keypad, star six. No luck, Carla?
Looks like he might have been temporarily connected, but it looks like he's been...
He put his number there in the chat. Is there any way you could reach out to him and just hold the phone up to the mic, to your mic?
We can be creative in this process.
Hang on. I'll call him and see if I can just get him. If I can get him, then I'll just hold the phone up. All right. We're doing it old school here. Five.
Can you hear now?
Yeah. Who's that?
That's me now.
Ah, success. You did it. Good job.
Well, my son helped me. I'm old school. Okay.
All right. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm glad to hear that there are some changes as far as the training policies and stuff, because without free speech, I just feel like we basically are subject to a government that can just do whatever it wants and control our lives. And that's, I believe, is wrong. And we will not have a free country anymore. And there's people who died in many wars in this country so that we could have freedom of speech and freedom. So I feel that this is very important. We need to stand for it unless we want to live under a communist government or totalitarian government. And, I, feel that we need to stand up for children, that's for abortion. That's what I was doing, because God, it commands us to love one another and treat people the way we want to be treated, and to kill our children is not loving them. And that's why Christ died, just because of our sins, and he rose again from the dead so that we could learn from his example to love one another, lay down life for each other rather than to take the lives of others. And so that's what I was trying to do, is be like Jesus and love my neighbor, especially the little children who can't speak for themselves, who are being killed at over 3,000 a day in this country.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. And I believe that completes public testimony, does it, Carla?
That's correct, Mayor.
Very good. Any further questions, colleagues? Seeing none, Carla, please call the roll.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. The settlement is agreed to. And Carla, unless I'm mistaken, that completes our business for the day.
That does, Mayor.
Excellent. Goodbye, everybody. We are adjourned.